Welcome to the latest episode of the Dialogue Out Loud series. I'm Charlotte Hanson Terry, the personal voices editor for Dialogue, a journal of Mormon thought. Today, we are excited to speak with Terry Petrie about her personal voices essay in the spring 2024 issue titled Yes Culture. In this essay, Terry looks at the yes culture in the LDS faith and its impact on her life. And we're really excited to have Terry with us. So welcome, Terry.
Thank you, Sharon.
Excited to have you. To start, can you just tell us more about your background as an essayist and a fiction writer, and what has drawn you to do that work?
I feel like I was born a writer, even though if you looked at my resume, certainly my list of publications, it wouldn't seem like that because there are so many gaps and pauses there. But my mom tells a story of me being in diapers, and I actually hate it when she tells this story, but here I am, standing at the sliding glass door, watching the rain come down in a diaper and a pair of her high heels. And then I turned around from the door and said, oh, they all went away so sad. And my mom thought that was so profound, and I just thought it was little kid speak. But now when I look back, I think, oh, I was telling a story. There was a story in the rain and in the vision of the backyard, and I was telling that story, and I've been telling stories ever since, or since then. I have a bachelor's degree in English from BYU and a master's in American literature from San Diego State University. And then after I finished my master's degree, I just did whatever writing work came my way. I spent a couple of years as the editor of a magazine for home inspectors and property appraisers. That was so boring. And then I moved into healthcare writing, which also didn't thrill me very much. When I got married, I did freelance writing work, whatever I could get while I was having kids. And then when my youngest, I have three kids, when my son turned two, which just meant we, for the first time really in our married life, we didn't have a newborn. It just turned back on, the writing turned back on, and I found I needed to write to be a good wife and to be a good mother. I needed to find time to sequester myself and write. So I stopped taking freelance projects, and I started working on my now completed novel, my novella about three women who find out that they're married to the same man when he tries to form a pandemic pod with them and their families. And then also my book of essays and short stories called A Book of Mormon Stories. In fact, 2 weeks ago, I achieved the trifecta, all three of those, the novel, the novella, and the collection of essays and short stories were rejected within 3 days of each other by different agents and publishers. And that's been the story of the past 8 years. I find people who are excited about my voice or my work, and then it's kind of like you can watch the courage drain from them, and they decide they are not passionate about publishing Mormon stories or stories about Mormon characters. One of the publisher that rejected the book of essays said that they just didn't think Mormon stories would appeal to general audiences. So I wrote back and I said, Black stories appeal to general audiences. Muslim stories appeal to general audiences. Queer stories appeal to general audiences. Stories about mobsters and sewing circles and poor white trash and fishmongers all appeal to general audiences. Why can't Mormon stories? And the editor wrote back and said, okay, fine. It's just that we don't want to publish your book. So, as far as my background, I am a professional failure.
Hey, that's all right. I think we're all professional failures in different ways.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, well, we're excited to have you. And we're excited that this essay has been published in Dialogue because I really enjoyed reading it. So thinking about this essay specifically that you've written, can you talk more about what led you to write this specific essay and what that process looked like for you?
Absolutely. And I can't express enough how grateful I am to Dialogue, because when the dialogue editors said yes, that was just one of those things that kept me going. It kept me writing. When you feel like there is someone who wants to hear your voice, it gives you energy for days and weeks and years. So when I started this essay a couple of years ago, my oldest daughter had just turned 12 and started attending Young Women's, and I found that I was remembering my own experiences as a Beehive and Maya Maid and Laurel, as they used to be called. And I generally run from personal essays. I find that I'll start having these thoughts that bubble up, and at first they don't seem related at all, and I push them away because they are thoughts about things that are painful to me, that I don't want to remember, that I don't want to sort out or reconcile. And I push them down until they become a big enough cluster and they bubble up often enough that I can't ignore them. And I start writing. And in this case, it was remembering the way my home teacher treated me when I was a little girl, and remembering my experience, my first steak dance, and a couple of related things. And finally, I sat down and started writing. And at that point, I think it's a very physical process. Like, I think personal essays come more from your stomach than they do from your head or your heart. And I'll just sit and write and write and write and write until everything is on paper and I start to see how they're interrelated. And then I'll go back and back and back and refine the prose and draw the connecting lines tighter and tighter. And I was at that point in Yes Culture on June 24th, 2022, when the Supreme Court reversed Roe versus Wade. And I was just devastated by that decision. I look back on it as the moment I lost respect for the Supreme Court, which was sad for me. There was a time when I wanted to be a writer about the Supreme Court. So there I was, a woman who has not had an abortion or ever been in a position where I needed an abortion. And I was felled by the fact that the highest court in our land was stripping that inalienable right from women. And so that decision became part of the conclusion of Yes Culture. And I just poured myself into weaving that into the end and writing and writing. And then I read it to my husband and went back and wrote again. And that was how I got through the first hours after that decision came down. I think it was a catharsis and rage that kind of wrapped up Yes Culture for me, and probably started it too.
It's really interesting that you brought that up as well with the Supreme Court case, because I kept thinking as I was reviewing it again before we've been talking, is about how you talk about Bathsheba as well in there, now hearing that background of how with that Supreme Court decision in 2022, how that pushed you to really be thinking through that ending. And it's interesting to hear how that compares with what you're bringing up with Bathsheba as well. So I don't know if you want to bring up that or that. I thought that was a really poignant turn within your Personal Voices essay. And so if you want to talk about it, feel free. But
well, I used to love that. It was a Jeff Buckley is who I heard it from first, but I think it was a Leonard Cohen song before that about David and Bathsheba. And it says, he saw her bathing on the roof, her beauty and the moonlight overthrew you. So always, I think all of us as kids hear that, if you listen to Jeff Buckley as a kid, and think that he saw her bathing on her roof. And then when you get older and realize that he was on his roof and she was, from what I've read, the baths at that time were down in the ground, almost like cellars. They were very private places. And so he had to do some maneuvering to see what he knew he wasn't supposed to see, her very private moments. That's a violation. Mm-hmm. Right there, she was violated. And then it just escalated and escalated because he was a man who was not accustomed to being told no. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's exactly what we're being told when we're told we can't make choices about our bodies is we can't say no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really thought that was powerful as well at the end, thinking about this idea of the yes and the no within how you wrote. How did you come to thinking about how you would put that together for, I mean, because you are a writer, so you think very deliberately about those words.
Do you mean at the end when I kind of make a list of no's?
Yes. Yeah.
That is one of those things that just came out of the pen, except I wasn't using a pen, came out of the keyboard. As I wrote, I was thinking about what my reaction would be if my home teacher or the young man mentioned at the state dance read my essay. And I just thought, this is my chance to say no to them. No, no, no. And it felt so good. It feels good every time I say it, even saying it now, to say those no's matters.
Well, and it's also, again, interesting to think about those powers of yes, but also powers of no. That's what came to me, at least, as I came to the end of it. It really hit. I was like, yeah, really? Because I identify as a woman. Anyway.
So I'm not the question asker, but I'm so interested in knowing how you envision the powers of yes as you read that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think because you talked about this yes culture, right? And the issues within that, right? And the impact of that, which I very much understood. And then the power of no, but then I thought also about the power, even after reading it, then I thought about what about different kinds of yes culture, right? What are some things that I could say yes to besides this type of problematic culture? So it was just a further thought, which I always love when I can read something that gets me to think, like, what can be things, you know, because very often I hear this very often about, like, you know, how often we have so much on our plates, even, which is a different kind of yes culture than what you were talking about in your essay. And then how we learn to say no, having too many things that we've been asked to do, right? But then also thinking about what are the things that I say yes to, though, like the deliberate ways that I could say yes, rather than because there's this culture in place that tells me I should be saying yes to doing these kinds of things or being okay with these types of dynamics or something like that. So that's what I thought also at the end is that how can we create a different kind of culture, right?
Yeah.
That's good.
I feel so sad that I did not think to include the pressure to say yes to everything that we're asked to do in the church. That would have been so good. That's your essay to write.
Oh, okay. Sounds good. That's the thing about a good piece of writing, right? It gets us to think about how that we can see it in our own life or maybe different ways that it might manifest in certain ways. So there you go. That's what I thought. I'm excited to see how other people approach your essay, especially now that it's published because of that. It'll be really neat to see the conversations that come up of that.
I'm curious. I think there will be so many things that I think, oh, shoot, I should have sent.
I mean, like you say, right? Like you can't put everything in every single piece of your writing, right?
I had to say no to some things.
There you go. You had to say no. So speaking of that, what are some other works and projects that you're currently involved in? You kind of mentioned some of them earlier, but some that you'd maybe like to share with people to have them look into some of the other things that you've been working on.
I'm really the novel that I've written is about five generations of an LDS family who you'd cross the plains with the pioneers, but then settle in California and don't go back when Brigham Young calls everyone back from San Bernardino. Because they believe in the gospel, but they don't believe in the law of polygamy. And so they stay where they are and right up until the modern generation when there's infidelity that kind of breaks the family apart. And I look at what happens to an LDS family, a historically LDS family, when they no longer have that connection to bring them together, where they go, what they do, what choices will they make. And there are two other books to follow that book that I've kind of started, but I feel like I can't deeply dive into those until the first book has a home. So those are projects that I would love to be working on, but right now I'm just really busy being rejected. That's my full-time job.
Well, I'll join you in the being rejected. It's a part of life right now, right? About being rejected in certain ways.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's how it works, right? But again, thank you for joining us today and talking about this piece, for taking the time to write it, especially with that process that you explained to us about what that looks like for you. And, you know, again, especially because of Personal Voices essays, like you said, it's personal, right? Like it's a process that, and thank you for talking to us about what that looked like for you. And you know, what that, you know, helping us to kind of see how you're in this piece, right?
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. I rarely get the chance to talk about my work. And so this has been so great for me. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, we're excited that you could join us today. And so to our listeners, we encourage you to check out Terry's essay, Yes Culture. It's in the spring 2024 issue, and other Personal Voices essays that you can find on dialoguejournal.com. Thank you to our listeners for joining us today. And if you have questions, and if you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and colleagues. We hope it leads to some really interesting conversations, especially around the things that Terry has brought up in this essay. We encourage you to get in touch with your comments and questions as well. And we look forward to continuing the discussion on Mormon Studies scholarship.
Beyond the Block, part of the Dialogue Podcast Network, is a weekly Come Follow Me podcast that centers the marginalized in Mormonism. Join Brother Jones and Brother Knox, a Black lifelong member and a queer convert theologian, respectively, as they read the scriptures through the lenses of their identities and others in an effort to bring the culture of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints closer and more in line with its theology, which centers Christ's justice and compassion. New episodes every Monday.
Dialogue Podcast Network.